lot of enthusiasm start to show today. I just couldn't hold back.
Sometimes you just got to get it out there, you know?
Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here with you for the next hour, or even before the hour, as we might have briefly heard for a second there. Apologize for that.
We will make do.
Well, we're playing radio every day, right?
Absolutely.
With me, Tom Hsu, in the control room.
Always a pleasure to be here, Tom.
Executive technical producer. Again, if you enjoy some of the videos here at Flashback Twin Cities, some of the audio we play, go to www.tcmedianow.com. And we have a great show today. We're going to have Steve Carroll of the Minnesota DNR, also a former sportscaster at CARE 11, Channel 11, and a couple events in history I want to talk about before we get in with Steve. The North Star Train. Do you know what the North Star Train is, Tom?
You know, I don't.
Have you heard of the North Star Line?
Yes, I have.
What do you think the North Star Line is?
I would imagine it's a northern train line.
I think
would I be correct?
You are correct.
Partially
correct.
I got one.
There is no wrong answer because I think there's three North Star lines in and around Minnesota. And we're looking at right now, I went downtown St. Paul this week and saw the great, by the Union Depot, the great train tracks of our Metro Transit Central Corridor train line. It's going to be run from Minneapolis to St. Paul. And I recall when they were doing the construction, they had to take out the pavement on University Avenue, and they found train tracks. It's amazing in progress that you cover up train tracks, we uncover uncover it, find train tracks, and then put new train tracks.
Had they forgotten that those train tracks were there in the first place?
No,
was it a surprise when they found them?
No, in fact, I don't think they were functional after the years of concrete on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I do just find it interesting, and many others probably that lived through the first time that the train tracks were removed, that were doing it all over again. Now, I'm not questioning its functionality. I just find it interesting that we're putting up the train tracks. In fact, we have a commuter train that goes from Minneapolis to the northern suburbs called the North Star Train. It is the second North Star train we've actually had in town. The first one was operated by Amtrak and was introduced in the 70s as a Chicago to Duluth train line. And as much as we love our rail, we've never been able to find a functional, sustainable way to support them. Let's play some audio from September 6, 1982. This was on the first North Star train that was going from St. Paul to Duluth.
Eyewitness News, the Northwest's most complete, comprehensive, and up-to-the-minute coverage. With meteorologist Dave Dahl, sportscaster Bob Bruce, newscasters Stan Turner and Cindy Brucato.
Good evening, everyone. Amtrak's passenger train, the North Star it's called, made its last run from Duluth to the Twin Cities tonight. For several years, money problems threatened to derail the North Star, but there were always last-minute reprieves. This time, it looks as though the North Star has finally reached the end of its line. Dennis Kraft was at the Amtrak depot when the North Star made its final stop in the Twin Cities tonight.
The steady, mournful clang of the train's bell was the only thing to mark the end of the line for Amtrak's North Star run from Duluth. That and the half-hearted smiles from passengers who made the last trip. It was an event tinged with sadness. How did you feel today coming back in the train, knowing it was going to be the last time?
Pretty sad about it. It was a really nice trip. It's a real nice way to go up to Duluth.
We went up to Duluth special to come back on this last Amtrak train.
I just had to take the last trip. It was beautiful.
The conductor and the brakeman were just super people. I just hate to see them go.
Those who rode the North Star home tonight said it was sad to see the passing of an era. The last trip was especially hard for those who worked on the train.
It's a sad thing, really. I hate to see it happen. I'm losing my job.
I guess we're all kind of bitter about it because it's a profitable train, you know. Yesterday we had about 600 people. And when you carry people like that all the time, they're making money.
Amtrak's North Star line has been down to the wire before, and always, at the last minute, more money has been found to keep the train running. But this time, there will be no last-minute reprieve from the governor. Amtrak has no more money.
Wait, there's more. A last-minute $27,000 funding donation was made by Duluth businessman Gino Pellucci. The train continued on as a weekend and peak period train for three more years. Unfortunately, by the end of service in 1985, the North Star was no longer planned to serve Superior, Wisconsin, as only making intermediate stops in Cambridge and Sandstone. State funding for the train ran out in March 1985, and the train made its final run on April 7th, 1985.
But then, like Cher, it made a comeback tour.
It made a comeback tour in 2010 as a commuter train from the downtown Minneapolis to the northern suburbs. Different rail line, but same name.
I was going to ask if they said they always found money at the last second. Now, was this always from a private grant, or was this from a government thing? Just somebody who loved trains and didn't want them to go away?
There's a lot of rail enthusiasts out there.
Oh, and, yeah. If you're a train person.
In fact, when I was kind of prepping the show today, I was looking up some items on the internet, and a lot of train enthusiasts have wrote about this line. But the state was pretty much done funding it. And Gino Pellucci, he gave a donation to the train to keep it going, and it went for about three more years. There's about three stories. You can look it on tcmedianow.com or the internet of the last run of the North Star line. Perhaps, hopefully, the next generation, we don't close any more trains because we end up having to rebuild them anyway.
Well, all we have to do is just get rid of the concrete and we'll have the tracks ready for us.
You know, I'm guessing if we'll go back to horse and buggies, right?
Well, that might be a stretch. But
it takes less fuel to run them.
Well, you know what? If gas prices keep going up, I do remember when the gas prices started skyrocketing, I did see some news stories about people who were riding horses to work.
I think we can park our horses here at the studio and do the show every Saturday, right?
Let's do that.
Let's take a break, and we'll come back with Steve Carroll. He's with the Minnesota DNR and a former sportscaster with KARE and WTCN and WUSA in about three different names. But we'll come back with Steve Carroll on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osman here on KLBB, joined by my guest today, Steve Carroll, the Minnesota DNR. And your official title is?
I'm an information officer for the Department of Natural Resources.
And a former sportscaster at
KARE.
Pick your call letters, WTCN, KARE.
Well, yeah, we were WTCN for a while, then we were WUSA for a little while, and we were KARE, yeah.
And you've been, how long has it been since you were on sports at Channel 11?
I left in 1994.
Excellent.
So almost 20 years.
Excellent. Do you miss it?
Some aspects, yeah. I mean, it's changed the way they do it now. But, you always got the adrenaline rush of covering the big sports and being on the location and being at the sporting event. So, yeah, some parts I miss. But it was a good run. Great time to be in the business.
How many preseason games did you have to cover? Vikings training camps did you have to go out in squelching hot weather to get a chance to, you know, get 5 minutes with Tommy Kramer?
Yeah, the exhibition games are different than they are today. I mean, the first-line players play a little bit more than they do this year or nowadays. Covering training camp, we used to cover training camp all the time in Mankato, and I went to school in Mankato, so mm-hmm. It was kind of fun to go back as a journalist and not as a student. And those were some long, hot days, but, it was cool to just cover the Vikings and cover all the sports teams here in town.
And you were able to cover at least one championship in your sports tenure. The 1987 Twins, they did win the World Series. So, as you can say, you had one pretty fun year.
Well, we had the Twins. We had I was there for the 87 and 91 World Series, and that was great. And I think one of the cool things about the 87 was they had that welcome home ceremony mm-hmm. from when they came back from Detroit, and it turned out that I didn't travel to Detroit. But I was back in Minneapolis, so we decided to do some live coverage from the Metrodome mm-hmm. for the event, and the event just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the next thing you know it, we're going live, winging it, because there was so much coverage going on, and the Twins ended up hooking into our feed. And so now our feed's up on the scoreboard, and so now I'm talking to the whole people, all the people in the stadium about what's happening, and the whole thing was winging it. I don't think there was a script for any of it.
Well, I think the best thing about that era was you look at these massive crowds in downtown Minneapolis, and there's no problem. There's no riots. There's no violence. There's no police involved. I mean, it was a very fun time, and there's a lot of people in a kind of small spot downtown. No problems.
No, I mean, even in the celebrations, when they won the World Series, it was, peaceful, but it was certainly civilized mm-hmm. Celebrations and just having a good time, and there was no Cars weren't being lit on fire or tipped over or any of that stuff.
Well, where's the fun in that?
I don't know.
That's only during a Frozen Four victory, right? 10 years later.
Well, that was a different story, I'm guessing. But, yeah, I mean, there was just kind of – they were just excited that the pro team in town won a championship, and it was their time to celebrate. And, yeah, it was really kind of fun.
Well, every 100 years are due, right? So tell me, Mr. Carroll, tell me about growing up. Are you from Minneapolis area?
Yeah, I grew up in the Edina area. I went to school at Edina East High School and then down to the college at Minnesota State Mankato. And
what's your goal to be in sports broadcasting?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, of course, I thought I was a professional-level athlete, as we all did. But that, of course, wasn't going to happen. And then at that time in the late 70s or so, that was when the former athletes were moving into the broadcast booth as color commentators or sportscasters or whatever. And I always thought, well, I could, yeah, I could do that too. I mean,
what was your major?
Mass communications.
Okay.
So I had some training.
All right. That's what I'm at too. No. Yeah. Very good.
And so I you know, I thought I could do it. I knew enough about sports to hopefully be able to communicate on TV and did some radio work in Mankato when I was in school and did some TV work. And so, by the time I graduated, I had some background, pretty good background, I suppose, to make the jump from – I went from Mankato to Minneapolis.
Which is pretty good because a lot of people had that very long road of small markets in Iowa and you take your pick, North Dakota, South Dakota, before you go to the 14th biggest market in the country. And
yeah.
You went to Channel 11, which at the time might have been considered a small market station, even though it's in a big market.
Right, and that's, you know, the folks that I worked with in Mankato kept telling me, well, people don't go from Mankato to Minneapolis. It just doesn't happen. And I was fortunate that it did work out for me, that I knew Jeff Passolt actually from through his brother because we played hockey against each other in college and knew Jeff, and that kind of helped me get in the door there at Care 11. And I went from Mankato to Minneapolis, and you know, some other people have done too since. But it's, I didn't have to go and do some of the small market stuff to get to the major market, which was probably okay.
Do you remember that first day on the air, Channel 11?
I don't remember the first day. No.
Okay. Do you remember what the first story you covered was?
No, I don't.
Because
no.
usually I get people say that, you know, the first, after their internship or after college, they go and they're usually doing some background work, and then they say, oh, by the way, so-and-so called in sick today. You're the guy on the air tonight. In fact, that's Jeff Passolt's story that he uses when he talks about his first day at Channel 9.
I don't remember the first story. I do remember, you know, I started as a producer, and a part-time producer, and I thought it was kind of cool when they would use my questions, you know, so they'd be interviewing Tommy Kramer or Bud Grant or whoever else, and then they would use my question to set up his response, and I thought, oh, geez, I'm on. That was me on the TV, and so that was kind of cool, but I don't remember exactly what was the first one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you started doing regular contributions to the morning news in about the mid-80s.
Yeah, they you know, back then they decided that let's have some morning news programming, and they started the Care 11 Sunrise segment and or show. And back then they had a live sports presence. And today they tape it from the night before. But I was the morning sports guy, and I thought it was great to be on morning sports and recap what happened the night before or preview what's coming up ahead. And that was a lot of fun, actually.
Well, it's fortunate because I think that I talked to John Bachman a few months ago before he retired, actually, and he said he's glad he got out of morning news because now about 3 or 4 hours long now. You get up at 4 o'clock and do 4 hours of morning news. You guys had a half hour, an hour. You were lucky.
Right. And I think the whole notion of morning news has changed. Now it's big business in the morning, and people are watching the news differently in the morning than they did before. And I think in some ways when we were doing it, it was kind of like the junior varsity.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are on the morning show, and someday maybe you'll get to the 10 o'clock news. But I think, you know, today, if you're on the morning news, that's a nice slot to be on. They get a lot of viewers, and they are on a long time, but they get a lot of viewers.
Tom, let's play that second window I have up. Actually, let's listen to a little flashback here from 1987.
Sunny and mild again in the Northeast. So it's going to be scattered showers around the
Gulf Coast. Tom, let's skip that a little bit to
the
news intro. I'm sorry. I didn't cue it up right. I have a little audio here from the Sunrise show in 1987, which Tom will play for you.
75 degrees this morning.
This road trip is really a stern test for the twins, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. The West Coast trip, they could either be make or break. This weekend really could make or break, and they got a two-game lead going into the series. If they don't play well, they could be in trouble. Well, put on. Two is the magic number tonight as the Twins open their big series at Oakland. Twins looking to snap their two-game losing streak, in the process hoping to increase their two-game lead over the second-place A's. Now, here is the pitching matchup for tonight's tilt. Veteran Bert Blyleven gets a starting nod. He is 9-8 so far. Oakland plans on throwing Dennis Lamp. Game time, it's a late one, starting at 9:35. Former Cy Young Award winner Vida Blue is talking about making a comeback. The 38-year-old Blue, who retired in February, says he wants to pitch again for one of three teams, including the Minnesota Twins. The hometown team is looking for a starting pitcher since they shipped Mike Smithson to the minors. Twins GM Andy McPhail is working hard to make a deal. He told News 11 Sports he's been talking to four or five teams about acquiring an experienced pitcher, perhaps a Steve Carlton or Floyd Bannister. McPhail hopes to make some sort of a deal before today's 4 p.m. trading deadline.
But 100 degrees, and the Twins weren't doing so great that summer, even though they won the World Series eventually.
Yeah, even if you think about it, I think they only had like 85 wins or something. Yeah, it was not a stellar regular season, but they won enough games to win the division, and then, of course, they got hot in the playoffs and the World Series. Yeah.
Now, I think the jackets are my favorite part of those newscasts. I think the light-colored jackets, the light blues, and the...
Yeah, you know, it was what it was. You know, I mean... You just look at that, the costume.
That's right.
Of course, you can't see it on the radio, but yeah, I mean,
it's a thing of beauty. Do you believe me?
Yeah, I mean, it was what it was. I mean, that's 20 some years ago, so it was probably happening in style back then. I don't know.
I'm not ripping. I think it's great. In fact, we've had Barry Zavan, a couple of the guys on. We said, "Do you still have the jackets? We want to know where the jackets are." But fortunately, they're probably in a Goodwill or a thrift shop somewhere.
Didn't you say everybody has a story about how it disappeared into some
everyone has a story.
Into the ether?
Yeah, the jackets went. It's unfortunate. So many plaids and blues and reds that are gone now. Our guest today is Steve Carroll. He is with the DNR. Information officer, you left Care 11 in 1994. Was it time for a change? Were you looking for something different? What brought about the change?
Well, I think it actually had to do with... there was some turmoil going on in the sports department you probably have talked about throughout your programs, but they had let Tom Reither go a year or two before
right.
I was let go, and I think they wanted to make a change, and they I was let go, and Jeff was let go, and then they brought in a gentleman by the name of Russell Shimoka.
Yes, they did.
Has he been a guest in your program?
No, I don't think we're going to have him on, actually, but I did find some – I looked – and not to divert you, but I looked for years for video of that experience because it was so surreal. If you don't know who we're talking about, they did a national search for the sports guy, Channel 11, and I think they made the wrong choice and brought him in here. And if you can't pronounce the names of the towns like Sheboygan, or if you can't pronounce the names of the Minnesota Twins, you know the viewers are not going to connect with you too well, and. Didn't last too long.
No, he didn't. But I think, without getting into too much detail, I think the whole thing was kind of orchestrated. I mean, I think they were trying to show that they were clearly going in a different direction by bringing in Mr. Shimoka, and the viewers did not respond to his delivery and his personality and his presentation style. And he lasted about 6 months, and then they replaced him, or they promoted Randy Shaver, and Randy Shaver's continued on since then. But, you know, as far as the whole deal, I mean, I always looked at the broadcasting career as kind of like an athlete's career. You do it, you work hard, you do as best you can, as long as you can, and at some point it's going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't always end the way you want it to, but heck, I was there for 12 years, and I got to cover all the major sports and be in the major market and be in my hometown market, so it was cool. It was a great time. It didn't end the way I wanted it to, but it was fine. I moved on and made some...
Did you have some offers from other towns?
I would say not offers. It got to be that I'd been there for 12 years, and did I have the experience, did I have the background where I could have gone to a Pittsburgh or a Chicago or Milwaukee or whatever. Yeah, probably. I'm guessing I could have.
Didn't want to leave home, though.
But I didn't want to leave home, and I thought, to be honest, it would have been kind of anticlimactic, because here I was, an Edina kid, covering the hometown team on TV in Minneapolis, you know, covering all the major sports, and to go to a different market just to cover sports, I just thought that...
It'd be tough to pretend to be a Milwaukee Brewers fan after being in Minnesota for
absolutely.
Your whole life,
and,
right?
It was like, could I read the news in Chicago or Denver or wherever? Yeah, I could be a sports reporter, but I don't know that my heart would have been into it, and because of that, I chose to move down a different path.
Yeah, the story does not become quite as genuine if you actually take that and all of a sudden you're in a different market and you're trying to pretend. I think that one thing the Minnesota viewers are very in tune to is phoniness, and when people come here from different cities, and some last 20, 30 years here, and they come connected part of the community, but to come in and all of a sudden, oh yeah, I'm a Twins fan now, and I know about the Twins. I think that Channel 5's had a few different sportscasters over the years that it's never quite connected with the audience because they know it came from a national search and they don't have any connection to the town whatsoever.
Right. And like I said, it was pretty much the dream job to be working in Minneapolis for a hometown guy. And we got to cover all the major sports came through during that time, you know, the Stanley Cups and the World mm-hmm. Series and the U.S. Opens and the Final Fours. And you had the Gophers, the Twins, and all the major sports. So it was like... Could I do sports someplace else in a different market? Yeah, I know I could, but it was just like I don't know that my heart would have been into it.
And as a young guy, being a sports fan and athlete, when you're interviewing Bud Grant and Harmon Killebrew, this had been like dream come true to have access to these guys that were legends probably when you were growing up, to be able to see them up close, and you're actually not only seeing them shaking their hand, you're talking to them on TV.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, to be honest, I lived by Harmon Killebrew in Edina. And when we were kids, if you can believe this, we could ride down to his house and knock on his door and say, is Harmon here? And then if he is, can we get his autograph? And sure enough, he would.
And if you could do that now, you'd ask if you could have some of his Killebrew.
Well,
exactly
there you
right.
go. Well, the pay scale is a little bit different for Twins, for baseball players back in the 60s and 70s than it is today.
Yeah, know? And the accessibility to the media is so much different than it was back then. But he was a great guy and very easy to work with. And it was kind of like, wow, I'm talking to Harmon Killebrew. So that was kind of cool. I thought Bud Grant was awesome to talk to, but to be honest, he was probably the hardest guy for me to interview because he kind of got it
mm-hmm.
and wasn't going to let you kind of steer him down a path he wasn't interested in going in. And back then, you did one-on-one interviews. Today, they all do a group interview
right.
Situation. But back then, you did a one-on-one interview with Bud, and if he didn't like the direction you're going with the questions, he would tell you.
our guest today, Steve Carroll, DNR information officer and former sportscaster, Channel 11. Yeah, you don't see a lot of Bud Grant press conference videos around now. Jerry Burns, a lot of press conference video, which is legendary on the internet, but not a lot of Bud Grant press conference
right.
video.
And I think that's all changed. I mean, you see now it's huge business, and it's all kind of scripted, you know. On Wednesdays you talk to Leslie Frazier at whatever time and the players at whatever time, and it's usually in a group setting for most of the star players. Back then you would call up and say, I'd like to talk to Bud Grant. Okay, be by here about 2 o'clock. And maybe it happened at 2 o'clock, or maybe it happened at 4 o'clock. And mm-hmm. sometimes you would get him, but you'd get him by yourself, and you weren't with the other guys, and it was different. But he was a great interview, but you really had to be on your game. Otherwise, he would stare you down with those eyes.
Yeah, I don't think that may be a little bit intimidating interview, I think, with Bud Grant. I know that even people that very seasoned, experienced people, Tom and Sam Turner, we've been here, they've said the same thing that, Bud, you're in with Bud, and you're there week after week in the Bud Grant show, and you don't really get buddy up with Bud. He kind of gives you what he's willing to give you, and go with that.
Yeah, and like I said, today you can kind of steer the coaches and players down a path that you kind of want to go at, and Bud wasn't he wasn't like that. He wasn't interested in being.
He did his first state fair this year.
Yeah,
I saw that first state fair.
You know, I remember we were talking, and I was doing one of those one-on-one interviews with Bud, and we started talking. It was probably a quarterback situation if someone was hurt or who was playing, and he got going into entertainment value and that thing, and I said something about, so you're saying that with this backup quarterback, there's not going to be good entertainment? And that was kind of the end of the interview.
This is the end of the interview,
Steve. And he took the microphone off and walked away. But
he didn't show a lot of emotionally anger or happiness either way. He just kind of gave it, here's what it is, and walked away. He wouldn't do a tirade like some of the coaches would today.
No, I mean, he was a gentleman or whatever, but you kind of knew where you stood.
Right.
And if you were going down a path that he wasn't interested in going, it was, like I said, that was the end of the interview.
So come 1994, did you come home and like, okay, now what? Now what am I going to do next with my life?
Well, it happened like you kind of see on TV sometimes, where it was one of those things where I showed up to work one day and was told that, Steve, this is your last day, so if you could clean out your desk and, you know, take your stuff with you.
You didn't have security follow you out the door, did you?
I don't recall security following me out the door, but it was kind of, it was weird because I showed up for work thinking it was just going to be another day, and you get called in and being told it was your last day, it was obviously a surprise. And so it took me a while to come to understand what happened, mm-hmm. and regroup and refocus and move down a different path. But like I said, it was great while it lasted, and I likened it to an athlete's career. And
did they tell you why it was over, or did they just say, you're done?
I think it was sort of the, you're doing a good job.
We thank you for your contributions and wish you best.
Yeah, so it's not really something you could have improved on. It was just, well, you're done.
Well, like I said, I think that, without getting into too much of it, sure. I think it was tied into the litigation stuff that they had going on with sure. with Tom Ryder, mm-hmm. and that
a lot of political challenges probably going on at the time.
Well, I think so, because I don't think that Jeff or myself had done anything to
create challenges
to create a situation where we maybe need to make a change with mm-hmm. what those guys are doing, mm-hmm. and like I said, I think it had to do a little bit more with the litigation that they were dealing with, or the court case they were dealing with, and actual job performance.
Okay.
Although they wouldn't tell me that.
And they won't.
No, they won't, and that it is what it is, and I understand that's the business, and like I said, it happens. It
happens to Chris Cluey, happens to the best of us.
Well, you kind of know when you're going into it. Like I said, it's going to end for you sometime, whether you like it or not, or you can't always choose the way it's going to end for you. But
so the journey from sports broadcasting to the DNR, how did that journey take place?
Well, following the TV career, I got into the public relations business with a company called PR Newswire, mm-hmm. and they're a news release distribution service, and I used my sports background there to help that company develop a sports distribution service that they're still doing just fine with today. From there, I went to a publication called Let's Play Hockey, where I served as the editor there for 3-4 years, and now it was time to look for other opportunities, and I interviewed for the DNR. And I think what intrigued the DNR staff was that I had the broadcast experience that some of those folks didn't have. And so I was able to bring the insight into how the TV business works into our communications team at the DNR.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I think the DNR might have had some challenges with their PR department by the time you joined the group. Because I know that the DNR, in fact, a lot of agencies in Minnesota had some, the lottery, a couple other ones, just had some PR challenges to the public. And
yeah.
It was probably good to have someone that knew how to address the public into the team.
Well, if you pick up the paper today, it's almost every day there's something in there about something going on at the DNR, good or bad, and same with the TV news. And so I think that I've helped our staff and the agency learn how to deal with the TV media, learn how to, we pitch stories to them and explain to them how a newsroom works and what might pique their curiosity, why they might come over and cover a story, and how we can help them best present it visually. And like I said, I think the media knows that. The Twin City media knows that we can help them get their stories done. So that's why we're on TV all the time.
And you're working on some of these controversial topics, too. We were talking before the show started. I know the wolf hunting has been a controversial topic in Minnesota. It's legal now. There's so many licenses that are offered right now. Do you work on those types of press releases, or how to deal with the media when they inquire about these types of conversations?
Yeah, it depends what the topic is. Just not too long ago, we were talking about the alligators in a Twin Cities lake. The kids released the alligators or alligators.
Where are these alligators?
Back up a little bit. That's what?
Are we in Southern Florida?
It was all over the news for a while. There was a couple of alligators released in a Twin Cities lake.
Oh, great.
And
Lake Placid?
And so it was perfect. The owner of the alligators was out there in a boat with his overalls on and no shirt. And it was perfect TV. But, so it's there's all kinds of daily issues. But So we often meet beforehand, you know, whatever the topic is, to kind of strategize a little bit and figure out our talking points and how we're going to best present the DNR's perspective on the different issues, and whether that means a news conference or a teleconference or media availability, we all talk about that.
Are you involved with a lot of crisis communication?
Well, it seems like there's every day. Yes, and so, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. Whether, you know, the thing about the DNR is people are passionate about the outdoors.
Well, this is Minnesota, so this is we have a lot of lakes to cover and a lot of legislation that goes through our state house on DNR issues and DNR topics. This is not Indiana. I mean, we have a lot of water here, a lot of wetlands, boundary waters. It's a lot of space to cover.
Yeah, and like I said, people are passionate about what's happening and with the natural resources, and so,
we mustn't get involved, Bud Grant, because Bud likes to speak for the DNR occasionally. Once in a while, he kind of steps out there and starts.
No, we haven't. You know, he's into the Mille Lacs deal, I think, and we haven't dealt with him or interacted with him for a long time. And you know, like I said, it is what it is. I mean, I try not to get emotionally attached to any of the stories. Just do my job and do the best I can for the DNR and best we can for the media to get them the stories and the information they need to best present the story.
Great. Our guest today, Steve Carroll. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk a little more sports from the heyday of the 80s and a little bit more about Steve's other entrepreneur company I want to talk a little bit about. And we'll come back on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.
City's fastest growing television news, News 11 Sunrise, with John Bachman, Amy Powell, Steve Carroll on sports, and meteorologist Sally Patrick.
Good morning. It's Friday, July 31st, the last day of the month.
The People Who Care, Channel 11.
Well, that was a great team. You know, John recently retired, as you know.
Yeah, he was the number one news anchor at WHO for a long time.
Yeah. Amy's a reporter in Los Angeles.
Right.
And Sally, I think, is out of the business, but her husband is in the business, and I think they live in Cleveland.
Yeah, we've had both Andre and Sally on the show, and they are still in Cleveland. She still does weather backup once in a while. He's the main meteorologist at WJW in Cleveland.
They used to do the Weather Couple Coffee
Quiz. That's right. before Frank and Amelia, we had Sally and Andre.
Yeah, so they would have one person be inside, one person be outside, and they'd try to stump each other with weather questions.
would that ever work? Could they do it to each other?
They might have been a little staged, a little bit,
but it was unique, and well, they were personable.
And the great thing at 11 at the time was they were, our guest today, Steve Carroll, they were willing to try things that had not been tried before. I mean, I talked to Paul Douglas one time, and I said, how do they let someone who's 25 years old come into this big building and then let them rip out a wall and put a backyard studio on up there? And he said they tried everything to get some ratings, so why not?
Yeah, I mean, they had money. Gannett did, and so, or still does, but they had money and were willing to try things to do it different. They were ready to break out of the box and do things differently, and so they created the backyard weather scene or weather situation, which now is fairly common throughout the country. It was a little strange in the beginning, but it happens all the time across the country now. And
I'm just trying to picture going to my boss and saying, hey, I'm going to rip out a wall here in the office, and we're going to do this concept and see how well that would go.
I think the door would just close.
Yeah, we're trying. Yeah, it would probably close behind me, probably. Security would probably be following me about out the door, right. Too. You are an entrepreneur also. I want to hear talk a little bit about your business. Your hockey, it's a goalie camp, correct?
Yeah, it is. I run the Steve Carroll Goalie School, and I pretty much have been doing that ever since I left the TV business. I enjoy working with kids and helping them get to whatever level they hope to get to, and it's just been a lot of fun. I'm now, I think, in my 19th year of running my goalie school, and we train kids starting at age 7 up to about 15, and we run clinics throughout the Twin Cities, and
any NHL stars you've worked with?
No, well, I don't know about NHL stars, but
they're all stars.
They're all, like a couple of kids I worked with that, Jeff Frazee that came through the U and has kind of been up and down with the New Jersey Devils. It's kind of fun to see a guy like that, at some point you had some role in his development. Is he the reason he's playing at that level? Because he came to my school?
Obviously.
No, I appreciate that. But no, but knowing that you had at least a small role is kind of fun. And there's a lot of goalies that we've worked with that are currently playing at the NCAA Division I and Division III levels. So, it's fun to see those kids develop and achieve success and know that you had at least a little part to do with it.
How many kids a year did you have in the camp?
We run five sessions. This summer we run about five sessions. So we run five sessions and we get about 20 kids a session. So about 100 kids a summer that come through us. And then from there, that leads to in-season training, either individual training or associations will hire us to train their goalies during the winter months. So it's kind of a full-time job, but not really a full-time job.
Well, you're sticking in two spots. DNR and hockey are two parts of Minnesota. I don't think you're going to fade away anytime soon. So you're in the two right spots, and plus you're doing what you love, too.
I think that's the bottom line. I mean, I work at the DNR, and I enjoy the outdoors. I'm not an avid hunterman. I don't hunt, but I enjoy fishing and some of the other outdoor recreational stuff, and I'm passionate about sports and helping kids. And like I said, to be able to make a difference with them on the ice and show them some things that help them get better, whether they're a C-level kid or an A-level kid or a varsity kid. Or I even coach at the college team with Gustavus Adolphus women's hockey team.
Oh, okay.
And just to be able to help the kids get better and like I said, success.
Does it feel like work? I mean, if you're doing what you love, even when I do this show here, which is painstaking hours of preparation to do the show, we come here with a good time, and it doesn't feel like work. And I'm guessing that between hockey, maybe not so much the DNR part of it, but it's got to be fun to be able to come into work, and you're problem solving. You're either showing a kid on how to improve himself or how to get out of some kind of crisis communication here. The DNR, it's got to be fun.
Yeah, I mean the DNR. I mean time flies because you're always looking at doing something, whether it's tweeting or creating podcasts or do some radio work for them or crisis communications or Care 11 calls and want to do a story with whoever or Channel 5 wants to come over and do a story with whoever. It's all part of it. We just try to do the best we can, and then after that, then it's off to the hockey stuff and. I think that's just fun, and to be able to have fun with or do something that you love, and then there's a paycheck in there somewhere.
That's right.
Somewhere
is always nice,
but,
right?
But not the priority. And it's nice to have a little paycheck at the end of the day. But you're right; it's not really work.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned tweeting. Has technology been something you've integrated into your life, into these places? Because right now, communication, I'm guessing it's changed when you were in college, I was in college. Tom's a recent Brown graduate, so Tom's way ahead of any of us.
They made me get a Twitter account.
They made me get a Twitter account.
And I hated it.
But is this something that's been, come naturally to you to, integrate, technology and video and tweeting and texting into what you're doing, or has that been an easy road?
I wouldn't say it's an easy road, but it's been a vital road, and I'm fortunate that I have two boys, and one helps me with the goalie school on the ice with the training, and the other one helps me with my computer stuff and does my website and makes sure that I know the latest things about Twitter and Facebook and that type of stuff. So we do that for the goalie school. We have we have a website. We have videos. We have a YouTube page. We have a Twitter account. Mm-hmm. So we're up to speed there on the social media. From the state agency standpoint, that's been a little bit harder to do. But we've moved into some of our divisions have Facebook pages. We don't have an agency-wide Facebook page yet, but we have some of our divisions have Facebook pages and have a lot of likes.
Fans likes.
Fans, whatever, yeah. And then we do have some Twitter accounts, and I do manage the DNR's Twitter account, and we have about 10,000 followers on our Twitter account. And so we're probably a little ahead of the game compared to most state agencies, but
well,
kind of a slow process.
Even communication industries, let's say our stations in town, I think we're a little bit slow to integrate into, you know, what communication's done right now. You and I both have the same phone here.
Yeah.
And what I'm always wondering is why isn't like local news more integrated into mobile technology now? Because that's how people are watching. People, Generation X and above, or even beforehand. I mean, no one's home at 5 o'clock to watch the news anymore. And
correct.
You know, we're working long hours, and to be able to watch local news, I think people would do it, even if they were able to sell some advertising on mobile technology. I think that there is some market there. I think that's not been tapped yet.
I would definitely agree with that. I mean, I don't watch the news. I have my apps on my phone. I just pop that and everything that's been happening is up to date, up to speed.
Yeah, and I think that's what the challenges are for these for newspapers for sure, and TV stations, you know, as well. Is how do they reach their audiences?
With our guest today, Steve Carroll. In fact, if you've missed part of this show, you can always go to iTunes and download Flashback Twin Cities on iTunes or on the KLBB website, which is klbbradio.com. And if we have a pocket parent who wants to learn more about the Steve Carroll Goalie School, they can go to?
I appreciate that. Yeah, they can go to www.carroll2rs2lsgs.com, and they can learn all about our programs.
Yes, occasionally you spell your name wrong on the Channel 11 promos we were watching before the show started, so make sure you get 2 R's, 2 L's.
Yeah, they can find it in Google, and it's pretty easy to find.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of Google for Steve Carroll, KR11, occasionally.
I would guess. I haven't looked lately.
Do you get some parents occasionally that say, didn't you used to be that guy on Channel 11?
I do get that. I sometimes get, aren't you the weather guy? Didn't you used
to
be the weather guy?
Sure, yeah.
On a different station?
Yeah, no. That one? Okay, yeah.
You're the weather guy, weren't you, on station was it?
Yeah.
Channel?
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, periodically people will do that. It's, you know, like I said, I've been gone for 20 years now, and so I'm amazed that people would still remember me from 20 years ago. But
you know, people in Minnesota, they take this very seriously. They take people that are part of their homes every night. We had Ed Bud Kraling on, who was 95 this year, and you know he was on for 50 years, and we couldn't get him down the stairs where people were saying, hey, aren't you? Didn't you just be Bud Kraling?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's like I said, it's not much of an issue now, but periodically, people will see me and say, hey.
I recall a few years ago on the radio hearing the DNR Minute, and that's where I thought, that's Steve Carroll on the DNR Minute. Those were some fun little one-minute commercials that you did on life jacket safety and wiping your boat off of invasive species.
Yeah, we do. That's one of the things I do. I record Natural Resources Minutes. They're 60-second public service announcements, really, that are produced by Minnesota News Network and that are aired on radio stations across the country and or across the state. And different topics, and it's, again, that's kind of a new outreach effort for us, you know, that stations are willing to play our material at no cost. It doesn't cost us anything for us to get that coverage. And, that, again, it's just not a professional broadcaster, but I can read a little bit and talk on the radio, so it kind of works for a DNR guy to read them as opposed to a professional studio voice do it. And
I think you collect one paycheck, you can be a professional broadcaster.
Well, I appreciate that, but it's fun. It's again one of the things I do, and sometimes I put stories together for our website. Sometimes stations will ask me to do interviews or stories for their stations, and they know that I have the broadcast background, and I'm happy to do it.
Because your Rolodex still remains thick after you leave broadcasting. Still that Rolodex, those numbers. And I'm guessing some of them still may even work 20 years later.
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of surprised that the news director at KR11 was able to call me at home the other day about a DNR issue, which was kind of funny. But of course, we were able to help her. But, yeah, I mean.
Oh, Jane Helmke.
Sure.
She was your intern probably 25 years ago.
Well, she was the intern, and she was actually the sports producer.
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right.
And so, yeah, it's great to see Jane move up through the ranks at Care 11 and is now the news director. And like I said, she called me at home not too long ago for with a DNR question.
So one of those landlines still worked then, okay, apparently.
Yeah, she called on the home phone, and I was like, yeah, I suppose. And phone number hasn't changed.
People have those anymore, those landlines? I think we have one here still, don't we? Okay.
But, yeah.
No, that's great. Well, I think that, you know, it's any industry, and I think that what we've talked about is when you're in broadcast, everyone has to have a backup plan, and it looks like that, you know, your backup plan has been pretty successful for you. And
yeah.
And you know, wish you the best in the hockey goalie school and with the DNR. What's the biggest topics in DNR coming up here for winter? I mentioned wolf hunting. I know that's going to be the topic of the year.
It's hard to know what the topic will be because there's so many of them. I'm sure deer hunting will be a big issue. Wolf hunting is always kind of a controversial topic. I think there's going to be some mining issues coming down
that's
the road.
That's probably true.
You know,
how many? You mentioned about you're an angler. How many fishing openers did you attend? As those the big fishing opener days with the governor fishing openers?
Well, those were actually kind of fun, but I covered a lot of them for when I worked at Care 11, and I really enjoyed that because they'd set you up with a guide, and you know, our job was to follow the governor trying to catch a fish, and that never happened. So we just kind of sat in the boat, and while the photographer was standing by to...
You mean Rudy wasn't a good fisherman?
Well, we had Rudy, and then we had Arnie for a little while, and then we had Jesse. So the photographer was kind of standing by, and while that was happening, my rod might have been in the water just in case.
Those cameras in that era were about 300 pounds, too. So picture you're carrying this 300-pound camera in a boat trying to watch Rudy Perpich catch a fish might be a...
That might have made it easier, actually. The camera equipment falls in the water, electrocutes all the fish. They all come up to the surface.
You might catch one then. That's I always found it funny when satellite cameras kind of became the big thing in the mid-'80s, and they would show, here's what Canterbury Downs is going to be built, and it'd be a live shot at 10 o'clock in front of a big field because we have the technology to show you a live shot at 10 o'clock. Just some of the shots that we were intrigued by because they could do it, and now you can take that camera we have on our hands right now and probably shoot better video than we could with thousands of dollars of equipment 30 years ago.
And so, like back to your question, I covered a number of fishing openers as a reporter, and it's been fun to be on the other side and being at a governor's fishing opener from the DNR's perspective and see what happens from that side. But yeah, those are cool.
Which's been the biggest fish you've covered of one of these governors? Who actually caught the fish without?
I don't know who.
Did they ever actually catch a fish?
I don't think they did for a while. That kind of was the story. I think Arnie never caught a fish.
Jesse was probably the most experienced fisherman of the group. Probably
Jesse had huge crowds. I mean, I don't know if he caught a fish, but he had huge crowds because you never know what he was going to do.
He always claimed to be a big angler, so I figured he'd be the one that he was a smelt fisher.
I think with it was Perpich and then it was Carlson, and I don't think either one of those caught that I covered that they ever caught a fish. So that kind of became the story.
You know, that's a good peace of mind. I want the governor to be in the office working, not out on the boat for hours during the week. You know, trying to be. If I have a governor, that's a good fisherman, I'm going to be worried.
Yeah. So,
no Wendell Anderson picture.
That stage photo. No, we didn't have any of those. Arnie Carlson usually came fishing with Clem Haskins, actually the Gopher basketball coach.
Okay,
and both struggled to catch a fish. Actually,
that's unfortunate. What's the best fish you've caught out there when you did that?
Well, we had actually a media fishing contest during those events, and I won the media event one year, and I can't remember how big the fish was. But I do know I won a fishing rod, and I'm not an avid fisherman, so I traded my fishing rod for one of those push-button ones because that was easier for me to operate.
As long as the trophy's still on the mantle, right?
I have the little state of Minnesota-shaped trophy. Yeah, I still have that.
Perfect.
Perfect for the DNR, actually.
That's right. Well, again, our guest today is Steve Carroll. Carroll Goalie School, Google it, and also listen for Steve's DNR Minutes on various radio stations produced by the Minnesota News Network. And if you want to see Steve reporting sports, you can go to tcmedianow.com. There's still a lot of video, and I still get inquiries where everyone is, and you're one of them I get inquiries for.
Appreciate
so
that.
Thank you for coming down today, talking a little about the DNR and playing hockey and everything else that went on for the last 30 years.
My pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
Steve Carroll, our guest today. Flashback Twin Cities. We'll be back next week. This is Tom Osmond on KLBB Club 1220.